Yeah, I love a rainy night. Well, I love a rainy night. Hi, this is Mark Ruffalo, and you're listening to WGXC 90.7 FM, Accra.
WGXC underwriting support is provided by Gemini Construction, a full-service contracting firm specializing in complete electrical construction services. Gemini Construction, serving Greene and surrounding counties for over 40 years. For more information, contact 518-622-9829.
WGXC is made possible in part by the generous ongoing support of Mary Chatham of Hudson, New York. WGXC's sustaining supporters are among the station's most dedicated listeners. They care deeply about creative community radio, and their investment helps to sustain WGXC as a public platform for information, experimentation, and engagement in Greene and Columbia counties. You too can become a sustaining supporter by going to wgxc.org/donate and designating an amount of your choosing. Thank you for your support.
We interrupt this broadcast to bring you a special news bulletin.
Stay tuned to this station.
Stand by for news.
Direct via satellite from our on-the-spot task force.
Good evening from our newsroom in New York.
This is
Daily News and Weather Report.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant.
This is Tom Rowe. You can go to the newsroom at WGXC.org for more information about anything you hear here. Sarah Trafton reports in Columbia Green Media that Peckham Industries submitted an application to the State Department of Environmental Conservation last month to construct berms made of construction and demolition debris on its Catskill site off Route 9W. Previously, another company wanted to create an ash dump on the former Wholesome cement plant there. This new proposal would go before the Department of Environmental Conservation and the Town of Catskill Planning Board, with a first presentation from Peckham representatives scheduled for the November 26th Planning Board meeting. Former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck said she believes the project will have a negative impact on the environment. Peckham would bring in 600,000 tons of construction and demolition debris for, quote, a series of visual noise and dust barrier berms across the site to screen the industrial recycled asphalt pavement handling and processing operations from surrounding view sheds, including the Hudson River, unquote. If the project is allowed. Quote, if approved, this project will have a very negative impact on the environment and the Hudson River, unquote, former EPA Regional Administrator Judith Enck said. Quote, the last thing we should be doing is allowing hundreds of thousands of tons of construction and demolition waste to be imported to this riverfront site. It is imperative that the public get actively involved in opposing this project. It should never see the light of day, unquote. Local geologist David Walker said, quote, I will be paying close attention at the planning board meeting next Tuesday night to learn more about details, location, etc. It really is a poor idea to do a substantial dumping project within spitting distance of a big river under any circumstance. It is also worrisome that to hear C&D and possible beneficial material use designation mentioned in the same context, unquote. Read more about this story at HudsonValley360.com.
Emily Munson is reporting for the Times Union about the barrage of aggressive messaging aimed at U.S. Representative Antonio Delgado on cable and social media as the 2020 election cycle looms. On November 18th, the American Action Network, a conservative advocacy group, launched a $125,000 television and digital advertising campaign urging Delgado to vote no on impeaching President Donald Trump. The same day, Protect Our Care, a healthcare advocacy organization, kicked off an online advertising push to promote the work of Delgado and other Democrats on legislation intended to lower drug costs. Protect Our Care is spending $2 million in 15-second commercials targeting districts from 10 freshman Democrats, including Delgado. The Republican National Committee bankrolled a commercial attacking Delgado's impeachment support in October. The spot aired on CBS 6 Albany. FCC records show Delgado's counsel tried to block the airing of the advertisement by suggesting it made false claims about the congressman's legislative record, but the station chose to run the commercial. On his part, Delgado released his first 2020 campaign commercial in October and has been buying TV spots on NBC stations in the Albany area. The commercial highlights the many town hall meetings Delgado has held within the 19th Congressional District, a practice in strong contrast to his predecessor. And you can read the full story in the Times Union.
Brendan J. Lyons reports in the Times Union that the latest scandal in Albany concerns the State Joint Commission on Public Ethics, where in January, a member of the commission alleges that someone knew about her secret executive session vote. Julie A. Garcia, a former Essex County District Attorney, was appointed to JCOP by Assembly Speaker Carl Heastie. The Times Union is now reporting that Howard Vargas, Heastie's executive counsel, is the person who contacted Garcia. Quote, "I was alarmed when I was contacted so quickly that after that January meeting," unquote, Garcia said last week. Quote, "I was being told the governor knew how I voted in executive session, even though I was unable to confirm whether or not the information was accurate," unquote. The panel voted that day whether to investigate Joseph Prococo, a former top aide to Governor Andrew Cuomo. The Times Union is also reporting that Governor Cuomo and Heastie were never interviewed by the state inspector general's office as part of its 9-month investigation of the alleged leak. On November 19th, Michael Weiland, a spokesperson for Heastie, said Vargas called Garcia, quote, "without the speaker's knowledge. We don't know what motivated him to make the call," unquote. Read more about the story in the Times Union.
John Campbell is reporting for the Democrat and Chronicle. Tolls on the New York State Thruway will not increase next year. The Thruway Authority's Board of Directors, November 18th, approved its $1.3 billion 2020 budget, which keeps tolls flat for the coming year. And the budget includes projections indicating the current toll rates on the 570-mile superhighway system would be able to cover the authority's cost in 2021 as well. That means the existing toll freeze would stay in place a year longer than originally anticipated. Tolls represent approximately 90% of the thruway's total revenue. The tolls last increased in 2010 under then-Governor David Paterson as part of a multi-year increase in the midst of the recession. Currently, a trip from Buffalo to Albany in a standard passenger vehicle costs $12.85 when paying cash. Read the full story in the Democrat and Chronicle.
Nick Reisman reports for New York State of Politics that New York's plan to build turbines to harvest offshore wind around Long Island will mean many jobs at ports in Coymans and Albany. Wind turbines are too big to build on Long Island, so many will be built at the ports of Albany and Coymans, and shipped down the Hudson River. Enough turbines to create 9,000 megawatts of offshore wind by 2025 is the goal of the state's Climate Leadership and Community Protection Act. That's enough to power 6 million households and should mean lots of jobs in Albany County. Much of the hiring will begin in 2020 to build secondary steel components, including stairs and platforms, and gravity-based foundations for wind turbines. Read more about this story in New York State of Politics.
Patricia Doxey's reporting in the Daily Freeman. The Ulster County Legislature, November 19th, voted to censure legislator Hector Rodriguez for inappropriate behavior towards several women he encountered during the course of his work as a county lawmaker. The 17-5 vote came after an hour-long public comment period where legislators heard from more than a dozen people urging their representatives to support the vote to condemn Rodriguez's actions and called for the New Platts Democrat to resign. Some of the speakers criticized the legislators for taking so long to act. Complaints against Rodriguez first surfaced 11 months ago. Rodriguez attended the meeting via Skype and listened to each speaker as they commented. However, when it came time for the vote to take place, the screen on which he could see went black. Rodriguez was first elected to the legislature in 2003 and has served a number of leadership positions, including minority leader, from 2016 to 2018. Rodriguez did not run for re-election, which means his tenure as a legislator will end in 6 weeks. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman.
The Daily Freeman reports that with a little bit of snow on the ground at higher elevations, the State Department of Motor Vehicles is reminding New Yorkers to register their snowmobiles. Just like cars, all snowmobiles in New York must be registered and marked with a validation sticker. The department allows snowmobilers to renew registrations online at dmv.ny.gov. There's a link in the WGXC newsroom, and also by mail in person at a DMV office. Snowmobilers must carry registration and proof of insurance while riding their vehicles. Read more about this story in the Daily Freeman.
Governor Andrew M. Cuomo announced November 19th funding to support agricultural water quality conservation projects across New York. The $16.2 million awarded through the Agricultural Non-Point Source Abatement and Control Program will be used to address water quality challenges in priority watersheds and to protect the environment. In the Capital Region, a combined $968,000 was awarded to the Washington County Soil and Water Conservation District to work with one farm in the Lake Champlain and Hudson River watersheds. In the Mid-Hudson Region, more than $450,000 was awarded to the Dutchess County Soil and Water Conservation District to work with one farm in the Hudson River watershed. This year, the program is celebrating 25 years of providing needed funding to support New York's farms. You can read the full press release at governor.ny.gov.
And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, use the WGXC website, wgxc.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 46 degrees. Thursday night, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of around 34 degrees. And on Friday, isolated showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 50 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear with a low of around 27. And that's your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
There are so many extra web streams at WGXC and wavefarm.org this week. Go to wavefarm.org/listen at any time to find all sorts of web stream from the live microphones at the bottom of the Wave Farm pond and microphones out in the forest at Wave Farm to performances and town meetings all over the area. Thursday, November 21st, there's two live performances Thursday night at 8 p.m. First, from New York City, live from the Fridman Gallery, Leah Bertucci performs with Amirtha Kadimimia, her Phase Eclipse record release. That's at 8 p.m. live from the Fridman Gallery in New York City. Then also at 8 p.m. live from the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Party of the Sun performs. Also Lady Jane and Catskill's Alex Pede Wernquist opens the show Thursday, November 21st. Two shows you can listen to online at wgxc.org. Friday, November 22nd, another show from the Avalon Lounge. This time, Bunny Brains performs at 9 p.m. Friday, November 22nd, featuring Dan Seward, who hosts the Battlefield Earth Show Tuesday nights at 10 p.m. on WGXC. Saturday, November 23rd, another show at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill. Bill Lee, Jeff Beam, and PJ Gray DJs later at the Avalon Lounge in Catskill, Saturday, November 23rd, starting at 8:30 p.m. on the radio at 90.7 FM, WGXC.org.
To get a local event mentioned on All Together Now, go to WGXC.org and click on Add an Event at the top of the page, and copy and paste the information about your event in the boxes. Let's all get involved in our community. See what's going on.
at WGXC.org in the community calendar.
On Friday, November 22nd, shop local, handmade, and vintage at the region's largest marketplace of its kind. No barcodes, no plastic wrap, at Basilica Farm and Flea Holiday Market 2019. At Basilica Hudson on South Front Street, now through November 24th. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, presented by the 5th and 8th grade students in the Germantown Central School Junior Drama Program at the Germantown Central School on Main Street, starting at 7 p.m. The Bridge Street Theater in Catskill presents Pack Rat, a new multimedia puppet play that contemplates humanity's relationship with the natural world, at 7:30 p.m. On Saturday, November 23rd, Old Chatham Quaker Meeting House holds its second annual Handmade Arts and Crafts Fair from 10 a.m. to 2 p.m. with sweaters, wooden pens, tote bags, pillowcases, and quilted items, just to name a few of the carefully handmade crafts, goods, and others for sale. 100% of the purchase price will be donated to support the Quaker Meeting and its programs. Core Strength and Balance Workshop with Phil Spector will introduce exercises that improve postural stability, core strength, spatial body awareness, sensory integration, agility, and coordination at the Hudson Area Library starting at 1:30 p.m. Willy Wonka and the Chocolate Factory, presented by the 5th and 8th grade students in the Germantown Central School Junior Drama Program at the Germantown Central School on Main Street starting at 2 p.m. St. Rocco's Readings for the Dispossessed presents an evening with Mary Ann Shanine, Bethany Ides, and Ellen Rook, starting at 4:30 p.m. at Urban Aftermath on Hamilton Street in Albany. The Bridge Street Theater in Catskill presents Pack Rat, a new multimedia puppet play that contemplates humanity's relationship with the natural world, at 7:30 p.m. Hudson Underground Gallery presents local music artist Fame Swaz at 8 p.m. On Sunday, November 24th, Old Chatham Quaker Meeting House continues its second annual Handmade Art and Crafts Fair from 12:30 to 2 p.m. today. The Orchestra Now's resident conductor, Zachary Schwartzman, leads the orchestra in selections from Mendelssohn's score for a Shakespeare classic, Ravel's tribute to composer François Couperin, and one of Mozart's final symphonies, his 39th, at Hudson Hall, at the historic Hudson Opera House, at 3 p.m. That's it for this week's WGXC Community Calendar. You can add your own event and hear it right here on the radio by visiting WGXC.org/calendar.
Your forecast for the next 2 days. Well, on Thursday, sunny with a high near 46 degrees. Thursday night, a slight chance of rain, mostly cloudy with a low of around 34 degrees. And on Friday, isolated showers, mostly cloudy with a high near 50 degrees. And Friday night, mostly clear with a low of around 27. And that's your weather update from WGXC, 90.7 FM, radio for open ears in Greene and Columbia counties.
Welcome, radio listeners. You're listening to Bound by Books Youth Radio on WGXC, Acre, Catskill, Hudson, 90.7 FM. Listener-supported radio for open ears. I'm Emily. I'm the director of the Hudson Area Library, and I'm from Hudson.
I'm Fahim. I'm 15 years old and almost from Hudson.
I'm Lena, and I go to school at MC Smith Middle School.
And we're here every week talking about books.
Books we love.
Books we hate.
And other bookish things. And today we're going to talk specifically about books by and about Native Americans, because it is Native American Heritage Month here in the United States.
Or Turkey Month.
Or Turkey Month, but there aren't many books written for teens about turkeys or tweens.
Yeah.
Or children.
There's some picture books.
Yes, you can read picture books.
But there actually aren't that many books about turkeys. That are children's
books.
YouTube
video?
There are some YouTube videos. I have to say, I really do love wild turkeys. I have a fondness for them. Like when you see turkeys running across the road.
Yeah.
I'm like, you go, turkeys.
Once I was like, oh, there's a turkey. Good thing they can't fly. And my sister was like,
they can fly.
And I'm like, oh, God, they're going to come after me.
They don't look like they should be able to. But when they do, it's like, whoa.
Yeah.
They're such big creatures. And then they fly. Yeah. And it looks like they're working so hard.
Mm-hmm. It looks like they're like chickens that are flying, and they're like, whoa, what's that big chicken in the sky doing up there?
Chicken in the sky.
Yeah.
I love that song.
Wait, there's another
I just made it up. Mm-hmm. But we're not going to talk about turkeys, except for what we just did. But we have some books that we're going to read the descriptions to if you're interested in reading some Native American fiction this month in honor of Native American Heritage Month.
Yeah.
Let me start off with one from Fahim.
So this book is called If I Ever Get Out of Here by Eric Gainsworth. So this book is about Louis Shue Blake. So he is used to the joys and difficulties of life on the Tuscarora Indian Reservation in 1975. The joking, the fireball games, the snow blowing through his roof. What he's not used to is white people being nice to him. People like George Enfield, whose family recently moved to town with the Air Force, as the boys connect through the mutual passion for music, especially the Beatles. Louis has to lie more and more to hide the reality of his family's poverty from George. He also has to deal with the vicious Evan Ranger, who makes Louis the special target of his wrath. But when everyone else is on Evan's side, how can he be defeated? And if George finds out the truth about Lewis's home, will he still be on his friend?
Do you think he will?
Probably. Hopefully.
That'd be really sad otherwise.
Yeah.
But sometimes life is sad, and sometimes books are sad.
I just feel like, oh, I'm so curious. I want to know what happens next. Tell me.
Yeah, that book's supposed to be really good.
Yeah.
Yeah.
That might be one I get to this month. We'll see how much time I have. It's on my list of potential titles to read this month. We have one from you, Lena.
It's called Hearts Unbroken by Cynthia Leach Smith. When Louis Wolfie's first real boyfriend mocks and disrespects Native people in front of her, she breaks things off and dumps him over an email. It's her senior year anyway, and she'd rather spend her time with her family and friends and working on the school newspaper.
Yeah.
The editors pair her up with Joey Carews, the ambitious new photojournalist, and in no time, the paper's staff finds themselves with a major story to cover. The school musical director's inclusive approach casting the Wizard of Oz has been provoking backlash in their mostly white middle class Kansas town from the newly formed Parents Against Revisionist Theater to anonymous threats. Long held prejudices are being laid bare and hostilities are spreading against teachers, parents, and students, especially the cast members at the center of the controversy, including Lou's little brother, who's playing the Tin Man. As tensions mount at school, So does a romance between Lou and Joey. But as she's learned, dating while native can be difficult. In trying to protect her own heart, will Lou break Joey's? Oh my gosh, you'll never find out unless you'll read it.
I like that it starts off with her dumping her boyfriend because he's a jerk.
Yeah.
Why would you make fun of somebody's culture ever, let alone somebody that you supposedly care about? Come on.
Yeah. I don't really like if people do that. If people are like, haha, the Mexican people wear hats that are so big and long, and they speak Spanish, and they're not that good at English. Like, instead of saying tape, they say tape. Like, that's just mean. English is the hardest language because, like, tape, tape. Yup, that could be, like, don't judge anyone. I'm pretty sure they would even get it wrong if they were learning this language. So, yeah.
Yeah, I often at the library meet people that are learning English, that English is their second language, and they often will say, I don't speak English very well. And I'm like, you speak English a lot better than I speak any other language. Like my Spanish language ability compared to a lot of people who speak English as their second language. It's like, and I've heard it's one of the hardest languages to learn. I mean, every language has its quirks and difficulties, but I've heard English is extra challenging.
Yeah, because tape, keep, cape, and also, especially reading. I want to learn Japanese, but they use symbols, not like upside down question marks that are longer than I should be or something.
I love upside down question marks. Just saying.
Yeah,
it's a very good punctuation. I also like upside down exclamation part.
Yeah.
It's nice to know when you start a sentence that it's a question or something exciting.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right. Well, that book sounds very good. I like the whole Wizard of Oz inclusive casting drama, too. Okay, I have one called Mapping the Interior by Stephen Graham Jones. I've heard this is a very scary novella. So the description is, walking through his own house at night, a 15-year-old thinks he sees another person stepping through a doorway. Instead of the people who could be there, his mother or his brother, the figure reminds him of his long-gone father, who died mysteriously before his family left the reservation. When he follows it, he discovers his house is bigger and deeper than he knew. The house is the kind of wrong place, where you can lose yourself and find things you'd rather not have. Over the course of a few nights, the boy tries to map out his house in an effort that puts his little brother in the worst danger and puts him in the position to save them at a terrible cost.
Yeah.
I've heard that's awesome. And it's really short.
Mm.
So I'm definitely reading that one this month. I love a good short story.
For some reason, that just reminded me of like the opening to Peppa Pig. Hi, I'm Peppa Pig. This is my brother George. This is Mommy Pig. This is Daddy Pig.
Why did that remind you of that?
I don't know. Bacon, I guess? Or the pig squishy on top of the thing.
Okay.
Peppa Pig.
Spine tingling. I mean, Peppa Pig is scary.
Yeah.
Yeah.
Terrifying.
Because, yeah. And also, she likes bacon. She's a cannibal.
Okay. That is wrong.
This is scary.
All right. Fahim, do you have another one?
Yeah. It's called Trail of Lightning, The Sixth World by Rebecca Roanhorse. While most of the world has drowned beneath the sudden rising waters of a climate apocalypse, Dene'ete, formerly the Navajo, our reservation has been reborn. The gods and heroes of legend walk the land, but so do the monsters. Maggie Hosek is a Dene'ete, a monster hunter, a supernaturally gifted killer. When a small town needs help finding a missing girl, Maggie is their last best hope. But what Maggie uncovers about the monster is much more terrifying than anything she would imagine. Maggie reluctantly enlists the aid of Kay Arviso, an unconventional medicine man, and together they travel the res, unraveling clues from ancient legends. trading favors with tricksters and battling dark witchcraft in a pitchfork world of deteriorating technology. As Maggie discovers the truth behind the killings, she will have to confront her past if she wants to survive. Welcome to the sixth world. Yeah.
Cool. Sounds exciting.
Yeah.
A little adventure.
Yeah.
What's your next one, Lena?
It's called #NotYourPrincess, Voices of Native American Woman, edited by Charlie Boy. Whether looking back to a troubled past or welcoming a hopeful future, the powerful voices of indigenous women across North America resound in this book. In the same style as the best-selling Dreaming in Indian, #NotYourPrincess presents an eclectic collection of poems, essays, interviews, and art combined to express the experience of being a Native woman. Stories of abuse, humiliation, and stereotyping are countered by the voices of passionate women making themselves heard and demanding change, sometimes angry, often reflective, but always strong. The women in this book will give teen readers insight into the lives of women who for so long have been virtually invisible.
Yeah. Those books are great. #NotYourPrincess and Dreaming in Indian, I think is what the other one was called that was mentioned in that description.
Yeah, it was Dreaming in Indian.
They're really interesting to read as they have this nice mixture of art and like poetry and prose, and you know, it's all different contributors from different tribes, and yeah, it's really cool. Highly suggested. Okay, so this one actually I'm reading currently. It's called The Roundhouse by Louise Erdrich, and it was the winner of the 2012 National Book Award. And this is the description. One Sunday in the spring of 1988, a woman living on a reservation in North Dakota is attacked. The details of the crime are slow to surface because Geraldine Coots is traumatized and reluctant to relive or reveal what happened, either to the police or to her husband, Basil, and 13-year-old son, Joe. In one day, Joe's life is irrevocably transformed. He tries to heal his mother, but she will not leave her bed and slips into an abyss of solitude. Increasingly alone, Joe finds himself thrust prematurely into an adult world for which he is ill-prepared. While his father, a tribal judge, endeavors to wrest justice from a situation that defies his efforts, Joe becomes frustrated with the official investigation and sets out with his trusted friends Cappy, Zach, and Angus to get some answers of his own. Their quest takes them first to the Roundhouse, a sacred place and place of worship for the Ojibwe, and this is only the beginning. And it's so far so good. Louise Erdrich is a pretty acclaimed author in general, but also is well known as a Native American author. And I decided to read a book of hers this year. And that one was suggested by my mom as her favorite. And I have one more that I could mention because I know all three of us love graphic novels, comics. There's a collection of comics called This Place, 150 Years Retold. That I'm excited to read this year. And the description is, explore the past 150 years through the eyes of indigenous creators in this groundbreaking graphic novel anthology. Beautifully illustrated, these 10 stories are an emotional and enlightening journey through magic realism, serial killing, psychic battles, and time travel. See how indigenous peoples have survived a post-apocalyptic world since contact. I just love collections like that where it's all different artists and illustrators and writers, different stories, different themes. Very excited to read that one this month. Cool. So those are just a handful of books that one could check out if they're interested in reading some Native American fiction or nonfiction this month. in honor of Native American Heritage Month. We also have some poems we were going to share.
Oh, yeah.
That are written by Native American poets. Okay, I'll start with one by Joy Harjo, who's the new United States Poet Laureate. And she's a member of the Muskogee Creek Nation. And this one is called Perhaps the World Ends Here. The world begins at a kitchen table. No matter what, we must eat to live. The gifts of earth are brought and prepared, set on the table. So it has been since creation, and it will go on. We chase chickens or dogs away from it. Baby's teeth at the corners, they scrape their knees under it. It is here that children are given instructions on what it means to be human. We make men at it, we make women. At this table we gossip, we recall enemies and the ghosts of lovers. Our dreams drink coffee with us as they put their arms around our children. They laugh with us at our poor falling down selves and as we put ourselves back together once again at the table. This table has been a house in the rain, an umbrella in the sun. Wars have begun and ended at this table. It is a place to hide in the shadow of terror, a place to celebrate the terrible victory. We have given birth on this table and have prepared our parents for burial here. At this table, we sing with joy, with sorrow. We pray of suffering and remorse. We give thanks. Perhaps the world will end at the kitchen table while we are laughing and crying, eating of the last sweet bite.
Yeah.
That's Perhaps the World Ends Here by Joy Harjo.
The poem that the poem is called Whose Mouth Do I Speak With? It's by Suzanne Rancourt. I can remember my father bringing home spruce gum. He worked in the woods and filled his pockets with golden chunks of pitch for children. He provided this special sacrament and would gather at his feet around his legs, dropping his lunchbox and his empty thermos rattled inside. Our skin would stick to daddy's gluey clothing and will smell like mama's pine salt. We had no money for store-bought gum, but that's all right. The spruce gum was so close to chewing ember, as though in our mouths we held the eyes of coyote, and how many other children had fathers that placed on their innocent and anxious tongue the blood of tree. Yeah.
It's nice.
The poem that I have is by Jennifer Forster. It's called Flight. As a child, I tossed all my imaginary friends out the window of a fast-moving train because I wanted to feel my fist break open as I freed them, as each of their bodies whipped against the sliding. There, inside snow, dispersed into wind, their little heads rolling across the yellow plains, because I believed they would return, but none have since, not even the ones I didn't love.
I like how visual that poem is, not being too long. I have a slightly longer one here. This one's called She Was Fed Turtle Soup, and it's by Lois Red Elk. The willows were turning green, slips of leaves pointing to one another in a slow tempo, soothing the air with whispers of coming water. Her feet were bare and the earth cool, while a loose hem feathered her ankles for her walk. Bracing on stems for the gradual pace to not disturb all the sleeping turtles, she wished for sunlight in a shade of green to hurry growth and to keep her hidden. How close could she lean into the memory of relatives who lived this life of damp shells and slow demeanor without alerting them of her intent? All of Grandma's voices were now shaking her sleepy mind and begging her return to answer the details of her dream. It was the call of tradition that signaled the next step to seal the new experience into her life basket. She will be served turtle's energy for her growth. Off of Grandma's favorite tree, a knot was cut and shaped into a bowl. Handles in the shape of young turtles were carved into the sides. Into the cottonwood bowl was poured the prepared soup with essence of memory from a life once lived. Thanking all that came before this earth life was her detailed prayer. A calling of all water animals to witness the taking of one energy to give to the energy of another. A child who passed the test of recalling ancient blood. Her heart will live with turtle strength. Her life will be long and purposefully directed. Her song will be like the cool breeze moving tall willows above eddies remembering motion. And there's a little about this poem here from Lois Red Elk. which says, in the Dakota Lakota culture, the story of the turtle carries a life of longevity and purposeful living. We make turtle amulets out of deerskin and present them to new mothers who have female babies. The prayer and promise with the amulet is that the child will have a long, purpose-filled life. A small portion of the baby's dried umbilical cord, the last connection between the mother and baby, is sewn into the amulet and kept with the child's clothing. The prayer and knowledge is that the turtle spirit now cares for the child's spirit. Also, when the child matures and has their first dream, they are fed turtle soup. The dream is always good and reveals a lesson or purpose for the child. We celebrate with the child by telling them that the turtle spirit and energy in the soup is transferred into the child and will guide and protect the child in and through their dreams. So that's describing what the poem was about a little bit.
Yeah. This poem is called Carrying Our Words by Ophelia Zepeda. So this poem was like translated into English from Ophelia Zepeda's poem, mm-hmm. but it was usually like a Native American language. Mm-hmm. So. We travel carrying our words. We arrive at the ocean. With our words, we are able to speak, or the sounds of thunderous waves. We speak of how majestic it is, of the ocean power that gives us songs. We sing of our respect and call it a relative. Yeah.
That's nice.
The poem that I have is called The Reservation. How do you sweep a dirt floor? How do you describe the blue face of death to a spirit you will someday dance with? First, a dirt floor cannot be dirty. Second, her face was more green than blue, the color of malachite, or a crumpled dollar bill in a widow's hand. We lived so red in the corpse blue shadow of turquoise. And the author of this was Adrian C. Lewis.
I like the, what was it? They asked the question, how do you sweep a dirt floor? They say first, later they say first, a dirt floor cannot be dirty.
Yeah.
Which is true.
Mm-hmm.
I'm not sure how a dirt floor could be dirty.
Yeah.
Maybe if you had a lot of things that weren't dirt on it, like clothes.
Mm-hmm.
Like if you just threw all your clothes on the floor.
Yeah.
Then it could be dirty. Messy? I don't know.
It's more messy than dirty.
Yeah, because dirty implies there's dirt. And if there's supposed to be dirt, then it's not dirty. It's just dirt.
Yeah.
All right, I have one more by Joy Harjo. It's called Once the World Was Perfect. Once the world was perfect and we were happy in that world, then we took it for granted. Discontent began a small rumble in the earthly mind. Then doubt pushed through with its spiked head. And once doubt ruptured the web, all manner of demon thoughts jumped through. We destroyed the world we had been given for inspiration for life. Each stone of jealousy, each stone of fear, greed, envy, and hatred put out the light. No one was without a stone in his or her hand. There we were, right back where we had started. We were bumping into each other in the dark. And now we had no place to live, since we didn't know how to live with each other. Then one of the stumbling ones took pity on another and shared a blanket. A spark of kindness made a light. The light made an opening in the darkness. Everyone worked together to make a ladder. A Wind Clan person climbed out first into the next world, and then the other clans, the children of those clans, their children, and their children, all the way through time, to now, into this morning light, to you. That's one of my favorite poems by her. It gets a little dark for a little while, but then they find their way out.
Mm-hmm.
For some reason, that makes me think of, like, adopting a cat. And they go out, and then, like, if their children gets abandoned because you don't want a pile of cats just in your house, because cats can be lazy sometimes, so, like, they would be left, and then soon they would leave, or else they get, like, a special shot, and then they die.
Hmm.
But that's probably just at the adoption centers, like, the oldest one is... like, there for a very long time. They have to do that. But they probably don't only do that to dogs, which would actually be very sad. But, like, it's still sad either way.
Yeah.
So, yeah. But I don't know why they do that. They could just, like, wait, and that person would, like, probably get attached still or still love that cat or dog.
Yeah. When I was a kid, we found a mama cat and some kittens on our property, and we tried to bring them to a humane society. nearby, and they said that they would take the kittens and try to find new homes for them, but for the mama cat, they would just put her to sleep. So we ended up keeping her, and she was a feral cat, so she couldn't really live in the house, but she lived in our basement garage.
A feral cat was like,
area.
Isn't a feral cat like a cat that hasn't been lived with?
Mm-hmm.
Yes, I knew it because I explained that earlier.
And
in the
often
shelter.
They're not comfortable around people.
Yeah.
So, like, this cat, she warmed up to us to the extent that we could, like, pet her. And I think my mom could pick her up and hold her. I don't think I ever did. She very rarely would come up the stairs to, like, the main part of the house. And she wouldn't go very far.
Yeah.
She would just, like, hang out by the door.
Yeah.
She was always a little skeptical of domestic life. Mm-hmm. Can't blame her.
Yeah.
But anyways, we're out of time for today. But we hope everyone has a great week. Lots of quality reading time. Happy reading.
Bye.
Goodbye.
From the WGXC newsroom, this is the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. I'm Philip Grant. Although it's not yet official, the chair of the Catskill Democrats is reporting incumbent Catskill Town Supervisor Doreen Davis has been unseated by her Republican challenger Dale Finch. In the unofficial count published by the Greene County Board of Elections November 5th, Finch leads Davis, a Democrat, by 2 votes, 1,292 to 1,290. In an email to Catskill Democrats the morning of Thursday, November 21st, Margaret Tomlinson, Catskill Town Chair of the Greene County Democratic Committee, said, and I quote, "I was allowed to observe the counting of the absentee and provisional ballots in the election for town supervisor, and I am sorry to report that Doreen did not win the election. The count is not official yet, but the current count of 1,369 for Doreen to 1,410 for Dale Finch, a margin of 41 votes in Mr. Finch's favor, means it would not be possible for the few uncounted ballots to change the outcome," end quote. Tomlinson went on to thank Davis for her 4 years of service, calling the job of town supervisor, and I quote, "a tough and often thankless one," end quote. Tomlinson lauded Davis for her work in stabilizing the town's financial status, the installation of a new sewer system, and making Catskill a climate-smart community.
Patricia Doxey is reporting in the Daily Freeman, Democrat Brian Cahill has prevailed over Republican Andy Turco Levin in the Ulster County Legislature District 4 race. Cahill's victory flips control of a seat that has been in Republican hands for some time, thereby assuring Democratic control of the legislature in 2020. The Democrats will hold 12 seats to the GOP's 11 as of January 1st. Cahill, a former county legislator and brother of State Assembly member Kevin Cahill, and Turco Levin, a former Kingston alderwoman who now lives in the town of Ulster, were vying for the seat currently held by Republican Brenda Maloney. She was appointed in August to fill the vacancy created when her husband, James Maloney, died in July. District 4 consists of parts of the towns of Ulster and Kingston. After all the votes, including absentee and affidavit ballots, were tallied November 20th, Cahill had won by 53 votes, 1,377 to 1,324. Overall, Democrats picked up Republican-held seats in Kingston, while Republicans picked up Democrat-held seats in Saugerties, Dinning, Hardenberg, Olive, and Shandaken. Read the full story in the Daily Freeman. Nick Reisman is reporting for New York State of Politics. Former Vice President Joe Biden is currently the favorite among Democrats in the 2020 presidential primary, leading a field of candidates by 10 percentage points, according to a Siena College poll released November 21st. The poll finds Biden is supported by 24% of the Democratic voters, up from 21% in October. Senators Elizabeth Warren and Bernie Sanders remain at 14% and 13%, respectively. Among Democratic voters, 35% believe Biden has the best chance of unseating the incumbent next year. When asked about impeaching the president, independents, who were evenly divided on the issue in October, now oppose impeachment and removal, 59% to 37%, the poll found.
Siena also found that Governor Andrew Cuomo's favorability rating has dropped to 44%. His performance rating has dropped as well to 35%, down from 41% in October. Read the full story at NewYorkStateOfPolitics.com. The Times Union is reporting the New York Farm Bureau is predicting the average cost of a Thanksgiving dinner with all the fixings will cost 15% less this year than last. The Bureau's 2019 Market Basket Survey is projecting the average price of the meal, including a 16-pound turkey, to be $48.73, down from $57.54 last year. The cost difference is largely due to turkey prices that have decreased by 31%. Phyllis Kocher, chair of the New York Farm Bureau's Promotion and Education Committee, said, and I quote, "It's good news for consumers that this year's dinner is more affordable than last Thanksgiving. Farmers have faced a difficult year with low commodity prices, weather challenges, and trade disruptions. But because of their tenacity and hard work, Americans can still enjoy a nutritious dinner on their tables," end quote. And you can read the full story in the Times Union. And that wraps up the WGXC Hands-On Radio News Update. For local weather reports, public meetings, and other community information, visit our website, WGXC.org. From the WGXC Newsroom, I'm Philip Grant. Have a good day and a pleasant tomorrow.
Welcome to the Public News Service Daily Newscast for November 21st, 2019. I'm Mary Sherman. Today is this week's last day of hearings in the impeachment inquiry into President Donald Trump, and House investigators will hear from Fiona Hill, a former top Russia advisor on the National Security Council, and David Holmes, a top staffer at the U.S. Embassy in Ukraine. In closed-door testimony, Hill painted a shadowy picture of efforts to urge Ukraine to investigate Trump's political rivals. Holmes, who only recently stepped forward with information about the scandal, overheard a phone call with Trump relevant to the inquiry. During Wednesday's hearing, U.S. Ambassador to the European Union Gordon Sondland testified that President Trump, Vice President Pence, Secretary of State Mike Pompeo, and others with the administration were in the loop in a plan to urge Ukraine to investigate the president's political rivals in exchange for military aid.
Was there a quid pro quo? As I testified previously, with regard to the requested White House call and the White House meeting, the answer is yes.
House leaders have not indicated if there is enough evidence to pursue articles of impeachment. Should that occur, Senate Majority Leader Mitch McConnell said Tuesday that there would not be enough votes in the Senate to remove the president from office. A new George Washington University report shows that more than $1.5 trillion a year in federal funding distributed to states and local governments is directly connected to census data. John Cartier with the group Civic Nebraska says the report underscores the stakes for getting a complete and accurate count in 2020 to ensure states get their fair share of tax dollars needed for vital programs.
And this includes things such as SNAP benefits, public housing, employee training services, Medicaid expenditures, transportation, education. That is tied directly into the census.
Groups most at risk for going uncounted include children in rural communities, seniors, and minorities. Time is running out for the public to comment on the Trump administration's third proposal this year for changing SNAP, the program formerly known as food stamps.
The latest move would cut $4.5 billion from the program over 5 years by changing how states calculate benefits based on utility bills. More than 7 million low-income Americans are projected to see an average benefit loss of just over $30 a month. Anya Rose is Hunger Free Colorado's public policy manager.
Losing more than $30 a month is a really big hit to a food budget. This is going to mean that more families in Colorado have to choose between, do I pay the utility bills or do I purchase food for my household? And no one should have to make that choice.
U.S. Agriculture Secretary Sonny Perdue says the proposal aims to modernize SNAP and reduce benefit discrepancies between states. I'm Eric Galatis.
This is PNS. Debt collection is pushing families into poverty and needs reform in every state. That's according to a new report. We get more from Eric Tagetoff.
The National Consumer Law Center released a review of state exemption laws, that is, protections from seizure by creditors for basic items, so that people can continue to work and support their families. Jay Doran with the Statewide Poverty Action Network says more folks are living paycheck to paycheck.
People shouldn't be rendered homeless. They shouldn't be rendered jobless. They shouldn't be destabilized in a way that's going to be detrimental for their family, for themselves, and for our greater community at the expense of these debts.
The National Consumer Law Center did not give any state an A grade.
A landmark bill was passed by the House Judiciary Committee Wednesday that would decriminalize marijuana use at the federal level and give states more flexibility in creating unique regulations. However, it would still need to pass the full House and then the Senate, where it's expected to stall. Mass shootings often are preventable, and a majority of the weapons were obtained legally. Those are just two of the findings of a comprehensive federally funded study released this week from the Violence Project. Suzanne Potter has more.
Researchers found that shooters tend to have four things in common. They've experienced childhood trauma. They're at a crisis point or nurse a specific grievance. They study prior massacres and have access to a gun. Professor James Densley, a co-author on the study, says people shouldn't despair. Solutions are out there.
A lot of times we just write people off that bad things are going to happen and bad people are going to do bad things and there's nothing we can do about it. But actually, our data is showing us there's a lot of warning signs and there's a lot of actually opportunities for intervention if we have the right pieces in place.
The data show that 167 mass shootings have claimed 1,202 lives in the U.S. since 1966, with 20% of them in the last 5 years alone.
Instead of heading into the comfort of home after a day at the office, hundreds of business leaders from more than two dozen cities are gearing up for a night outside. Covenant House is hosting its annual Sleep Out Executive Edition in more than two dozen cities to raise money for services that provide safety, shelter, and support to young people experiencing homelessness. CEO of Covenant House Missouri, Jennifer Erfling, says executives will sleep outside in solidarity with young people who spend their nights on the streets.
It is a very moving experience to deal with the elements, the sounds of the environment, and to process what it would be like to have to face that. It's one thing to do it as a choice, and then another reality sets in when you realize this is sometimes the only option for young people.
Meanwhile, Sleep Out America will be held on Friday and is a DIY event that allows folks from across the country to sleep outside and raise money for the roughly 4 million kids in the U.S. who will face homelessness this year. I'm Mary Sherman for Public News Service. Member and listener supported and online, publicnewsservice.org.
This is WGXC's Congressional Report, tracking the votes, words, and actions of Representative Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck representing the 19th Congressional District, and Paul Tonko, Democrat from Amsterdam representing the 20th Congressional District. 538.com website reports that so far, the first term Congressperson Delgado votes with Donald Trump's positions 3.7% of the time. Since Democrats took over the House of Representatives, Tonko also votes with Trump's positions 1.9% of the time. In the previous congressional session, Tonko voted with Trump 22.6% of the time.
Emil Munson reports in the Times Union that ahead of Veterans Day this year, local congressional representatives were all a-Twitter about the work they are doing for those who served in the military. Representatives Antonio Delgado, a Democrat from Rhinebeck, and Elise Stefanik, a Republican from Shilerville, announced November 7th a bill for more federal funding for New York veterans' cemeteries. In Stefanik's Northern 21st District, 8.9% of the population, 18 years and older, are veterans, and in Delgado's 19th Congressional District, 7.4% of the population, 18 and older, are veterans. Delgado explained he is teaming with a Republican to try to fix something specific. Delgado said, and I quote, "I was shocked to learn that a technical error in our laws prevents Ulster County and other counties in New York and across the country from accessing much-needed federal funding for its veteran cemeteries. This prohibition severely cripples counties in states like New York that do not have state-operated veteran cemeteries, which is why I worked with my colleagues across the aisle and introduced a bill that fixes this problem and ensures local veteran cemeteries are properly funded," end quote. Stefanik is also crowing about another bipartisan bill passed in the U.S. House last week that she sponsored with Representative Charlie Crist to create a grant program to develop and maintain special courts for rehabilitating veterans who commit nonviolent crimes. Read more about this story in the Times Union. Chris McKenna is reporting for The Fray. U.S. Representatives Antonio Delgado and Sean Patrick Maloney are among 37 House Democrats this week targeted in digital ads by conservative groups opposed to the impeachment of